Good afternoon, goedemiddag, colleagues.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. Sorry for the delay. I wasn't quite next to my computer yet. I just logged in. yes,
then
good afternoon.
I started thinking that maybe I'm alone.
No.
I'm very well, colleague. How are you?
Also well, thank you. Positive and looking forward to closing in on Friday the 4th.
Yeah, closing in style. I hope you'll come around the house just to say the last goodbyes.
Unfortunately, not. I'm busy with preparation for the by-election next week. I also sadly lost one of our staff members that work in our office in my constituency. And I also have to be there, which involves a bit of traveling. So I'm going in the other direction.
We will keep in touch.
If you come down to Cape Town, yeah. Please let me know when you're around.
Okay. Yeah. All right. It's already past 12:45. I suggest that we start so that we don't delay anybody. I would like to welcome everybody, honorable members of the subcommittee. You are all welcome. Our guests, whom I'm sure will introduce themselves, you are most welcome. And to our colleagues who are supporting us most capably, thank you once more and good afternoon. Can I just have an indication so that I don't just talk to office, I speak to the person who is leading the delegation from the office of the public protector. I'm seeing Advocate Koleka Tsaleka. I don't know if I'm correct. Ms. Karelse, could you help me, please, as to who is leading the PP's office?
Mr. Mangu, the meeting is supposed to start at 1 o'clock. Members are a bit fast today. So I'm just waiting for everyone to get online because we want to members to get online.
Okay. Next time, let's arrange.
All right. I have got to on my diary. Yeah, okay. That's okay. Advocate Daleka, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, honorable members. The public protector would be joining shortly together with the rest of the team. I think it will take less than 10 minutes. Our sincere apologies.
No, we should be apologizing. I'm told we should be starting at 1. So we were quite in a hurry. We are ahead of ourselves. So I think we will be very unprofessional if we start having indicated 1 o'clock and we start earlier than that. So colleagues, guests, let us hold on until 1 o'clock. We'll start 1 o'clock sharp. I got it wrong. I thought we are starting quarter to, my apologies.
On our side, it's quarter to 1 though.
So on your side, it's also quarter to. I also had quarter to.
Yes.
And I see, okay, other than, the public protector, whom I'm sure had given you the go-ahead to start the meeting. Is there anybody else who we could wait for instead of starting?
The public protector is joining in now, in fact. She will be leading the delegation. The COO is already here and the other PPSA colleagues, but the public protector is joining in shortly. It should take less than a minute.
Okay. Honorable members, I suggest we wait a minute or two and we then start. I think we are all here, unless there is a different view from anybody, let me know. But if our guests are here, I think we should start. so that we can respect their time also. They've respected our invitation.
Mr. Mangu, yes, the PP is online.
Okay. That's okay. Thank you. Honorable members, can we start? Are we fine? I think we are also all here. All right. If you're not talking, I guess you are agreeing with me. Advocate Mkhwebane PP, good afternoon. And welcome to your whole team. Thank you so much for honoring and accepting our invitation and request to meet us with such a highly powered delegation of your whole office. It tells us that you do take your work seriously and the work of Parliament. And we do appreciate it. I do want to say we do not take it for granted. We truly appreciate your time and bringing in your whole delegation to be here. My name is Lisa Mangu. I am the chairperson of the subcommittee, and the other members of the subcommittee you will get on as they engage later. But maybe having greeted, let me not talk alone. Let me allow you to greet back, then I will introduce the meeting, then we'll go straight into it.
Honorable members, thank you so much for inviting me and my office. I'm with Advocate Galega. We'll also be joined by the COO, Mr. Mohalaba. And we also have our international relations official and the chief of staff of the office. And thank you so much for inviting us. I think we appreciate your interest in this matter, and it will go a long way in making sure that the reports which we issue as an institution are impactful to the public, and as well, your role is also, because it's an oversight role, will assist us a lot to make sure that those reports are implemented and indeed people feel the change in their livelihood on issues such as this one.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Advocate. And just to give a background is that we are a new committee in the 6th Parliament, and the report on the illegal conversions of panel vans into minibus taxis and other forms of transportation means was concluded before our term. But having been presented with the report, we asked the Department of Transport to give us an update on how far they had gone in implementing your remedial measures, which we all know are binding. We welcomed the report and we understood the limitations that you and your office might have experienced as it regards other entities that are involved there who might be private sector and so forth. We took it upon ourselves that we want to go into this report, firstly, to ensure that all the remedial actions are implemented by those who should implement them. And secondly, to see how we can enrich the report. By enriching it, I mean go and call those that maybe you could not have had access to by the limitation of what the Public Protector's Office or Act allows you to do. So the reason that we requested to see you was to have an understanding from yourself and your office as to the work that went around it. I'm sure the time we have might not be enough, but at least we have read the report, but just to give us a high level and understanding of where the limitations were. Had you had all the powers, where would you have gone? So that as we engage, we are able to close those gaps. So indeed, our intention is to take where you left it and make sure it's implemented. And secondly, we engage those that you might have not been able to reach. So I thought I'll give that brief introduction and hand over to you with no further ado.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson Mangu and honorable members. I will take you through the summary of the report. And from there onwards, I will then indicate those areas where we haven't been able to deal with and which also would be within the honorable members' remit or within your mandate, possibly then to engage those private companies, the banks, so that they can also play their role. Maybe to summarize the complaint, which was lodged in 2012 by Mr. Henny Dipier, both in his private capacity, and he was also a representative of several taxi owners who were affected by the conversions of these Toyota Quantum goods carrying panel vans into passenger carrying minibus taxis. I also received similar complaints in connection with the allegations of illegal conversions of these vehicles into these minibus taxis. So on receipt of the complaint, it was in 2012, my predecessor then engaged the or called on the national stakeholders consultative dialogue, which was held around the country and to make sure that this matter is dealt with as a systemic investigation. So during that national stakeholder consultative dialogue in various provinces, similar complaints were identified and were raised by all the taxi operators or those who are operating taxis. So in the complaint, it was that which Mr. Dipier's raised was that there are structural, defective and non-homologized Toyota panel vans, which were modified by the manufacturer, import and builders, which are called MIBs, and they were converted into taxis, which are carrying passengers, as well as the fact that they did not meet the South African government safety regulations, national standards, and requirements in respect of specifications, and as such, they should have not been legally permitted to operate. So, and that these vehicles are illegally converted into from panel vans into minibus taxis. And he was also then indicating how unsafe or structurally unsafe these taxis were when they are driven on a high speed, and that the accidents, they are very fatal, because if a tire bursts, and that will cause a loss of life to the passengers. So further, it was further alleged that various financial institutions such as Absa, Nedbank, Standard Bank, West Bank, South African Taxi Finance, as well as Toyota Financial Services, financed these illegally converted vehicles to unsuspecting buyers, thus contributing to the risk of death or injury to commuters, despite the fact that the manufacturer, which was Toyota Japan and South Africa, declined to authorize the illegal conversions of these products, citing that same does not adhere to international safety standards of Toyota Japan. It was also alleged that in some instances, purchasers of these vehicles were unaware about these illegally converted Toyota Quantum minibuses, And despite having been warned of the scheme as early as around 2005, the banks continued to finance these vehicles. And further, Toyota, the Department of Transport, was also alleged to have continued to illegally register these vehicles on e-notice. And you must know that these vehicles were allowed to carry only three passengers as a panel van, but then the Department of Transport was registering them as 16-seater panel vans. So during about August 2012, during the consultations, some of the participants, the illegal conversion of Toyota Quantum panel vans from minibus taxis into by MIBs, which were not authorized, and the issue of the fraudulent issuing of taxi permits and registration certificates by Department of Transport. So those were the issues which were raised during that particular consultations, and the fact that the buyers were not aware about these vehicles. But then you'd find that some others were aware about these illegal conversions because they were cheaper to purchase. So during then the analysis and assessment of this complaint, the office then took a decision to narrow the investigation and focus on these issues. Whether the Department of Transport failed to effectively and efficiently take steps to ensure the safety of commuters using these Toyota Quantum panel vans that have been illegally converted into minibus taxis. And the second issue was whether NRCS, in its official capacity as the national regulator responsible for the maintenance of compulsory specifications, failed to take effective and efficient steps to ensure that all these MIBs comply with the compulsory specifications as envisaged by the NRS Act, so as to restrict the illegal conversions of these panel vans. The third issue, whether SABS conducted adequate quality assurance tests when it was requested to do so by the Department of Transport in 2009. So the general observations which during the investigations, which we could pick up, was the involvement of the banks, the involvement of these private companies. And again, considering the jurisdiction of the public protector, in that report, we made these general observations that the public protector has no jurisdiction to investigate private companies, but then our jurisdiction is limited in terms of section 239 to investigate organs of state. So in our investigations, therefore, we could investigate institutions where those institutions are also exercising public power or performing a public function. So we could then have a finding or a remedial action as far as the banks and the private companies are concerned. But then these observations are very critical because then the portfolio committee can utilize them going forward in engaging the banks. It was observed during the investigations that some of the financial institutions did not inspect the goods that they were financing before they paid out the transactions. They only relied on the master dealer agreement signed with the motor vehicle dealers. Secondly, further thereto, and with regard to the financing of these vehicles, it was observed that after some banks became aware of these illegal converted vehicles, they did not enforce the master dealer agreement and or master service agreement, which is an agreement between banks and the motor vehicle dealers. This agreement is to safeguard banks and consumers, and it provides for a recourse to the dealer if the vehicles in question cannot be used by the customer for the purpose it was intended for. And some financial institutions never assisted the illegal converted panel van owners to be reimbursed for their deposits and payments, which were made when the owners became aware that they had purchased an illegally converted vehicle. Instead, they repossess the vehicle and then sell it to on auction to another unsuspecting buyer. So that's what was happening. Another general observation was with regard to Toyota South Africa. The notification of 19 October 2005 by Toyota South Africa Motors to its Toyota dealers was not emphatically instructive, as it opened a room for manipulation, as it takes the blame off Toyota South Africa Motors and places it on illegal converted panel van owners. So therefore, there could be some Toyota dealers who converted the panel vans themselves and sold them from their dealer floor as the purpose built homologated Toyota Quantum. There are some Toyota dealers who sold panel vans to bona fide taxi owners and then told them where to go to convert these vehicles. So Toyota Finance continued to finance these vehicles and only acted in July 2009 to investigate how these vehicles had come to be financed, whilst Toyota South Africa knew about these illegal converted vehicles and issued a notification in October 2005, as I've mentioned above. So Toyota South Africa motor sales on panel vans went up during the period 2005 to 2008, when these panel vans were converted, and they should have been worried about this and raised public awareness to ensure that these illegally converted panel vans are not used to convey passengers. So the findings which we had to come up with are that the allegations that the department failed to take effective and efficient steps to ensure the safety of these commuters and the fact that whether they failed to protect taxi owners from the consequences of purchasing these illegally converted panel vans, we found that that allegation was substantiated. The department was warned about the practice and the existence of this in 2009, but failed to timely ensure that all vehicles that were illegally converted and not brought in to be corrected were impounded and thus taken off the road as envisaged in terms of the National Land Transport Act. So Toyota South Africa became aware of the practice as far back as 2005. But they never took any action to correct this fatal mistake. Further, the evidence or information in our possession display or demonstrate that the Department of Transport took some action because it was ultimately not efficient and effective to ensure that the commuters are protected, because they took a progressive step and removed around 1,986 illegally converted panel vans from the road through the approved retrofitment, in fact, which were not rectified by the retrofitment process. With regard to the illegally converted Toyota panel vans, the department delayed to rectify the mistake. And it was only in March 2018 that steps were taken to remove these hazardous vehicles from the South African roads. And further, it was unlawful for these vehicles to be operating. And unfortunately, they were licensed and registered by the very same department through eNATIS. And there are gaps when these illegal converted vehicles are captured in the eNATIS, as the information as they, such as the ID numbers and the VIN numbers, when they are captured, you could pick up that this is a panel van, but they would register them as 16-seater vehicles. So the department finally considered that the possibilities that the frontline staff at the licensing offices altered information on eNATIS system, thus opening the system to manipulation and fraudulent operations. And what we've picked up as well was that eNATIS is not an integrated system. So whatever each province is capturing into the system is not integrated so that they can then trace these issues. The other issue was the finding against the national regulator, where they failed to also take effective steps to ensure that all these MIBs, which were converting these panel vans, complied to the NRCS Act in order to restrict the illegal conversion of these vehicles into passenger carrying vehicles. So that finding was substantiated, and it is the primary role and function of NRCS to administer and maintain compulsory specifications in the interest of public safety and health, as well as promoting the rights and obligations of government to protect the health and safety of the public. In its capacity as a regulator for compulsory specifications, they are responsible, among others, for the issue of making sure that there's regulation and compliance system, which specifications are for market surveillance by the national regulator, and also to ensure that there's compliance to the compulsory specifications. So therefore, in other words, NRCS serves as an inspectorate of MIBs. And we've discovered that they would not conduct inspections at those MIBs and to hold them accountable for these illegal conversions. So NRCS was advised by Toyota South Africa of the practice of these conversions, and they failed to take steps to stop the practice, resulting in vehicle accidents, which had severe consequences to the commuters. And we know, honorable members, that accidents also are causing a lot of increase in our fiscals, because then the issue of or the budget of road accident fund will have to be or will be exhausted, because families and all those who are involved in accidents will be claiming. So it is admitted that 436 vehicles were retrofitted to make them safer, but NRCS failed to conduct surveillance to ensure the safety of the public. And therefore, NRCS also failed to ensure that there are no MIBs who are illegally converting these vehicles, because they would go ahead and convert, and there was no accountability, there was no quality assurance in those. So the Department of Transport and RMTC established that there are 1,986 illegally converted panel vans that did not follow the correct process of retrofitment, because this retrofitment was done by NRCS and Department of Transport to ensure that possibly there's also improvement on the seat anchoring, on the body of the panel vans, though also that was not helpful, because once that car is involved or that vehicle is involved in accident, it will cause serious damage or injury to the passengers. The other finding was against SABS, which was responsible for conducting a quality assurance test. And they failed to conduct a quality assurance, and that was also a finding which we said is substantiated, because the SABS is a national standardization entity of the Republic, which is responsible for the development and maintenance of national standards. They are experts in the field, and the government and any applicant relies on SABS them with regard to the quality of a commodity product or service. So SABS failed to conduct adequate quality assurance in this instance to ensure that these vehicles are safe, the tests that were agreed upon between the Department of Transport and Tascal team and SABS was that they will only conduct tests on rollover, the tilt test and the brake test and the seat belt anchorage test. So the test conducted on a static vehicle, not on a moving vehicle. Therefore, if you are saying this vehicle is safe, how do you determine if this vehicle roll over or has there's that impact of an accident, how will this vehicle could be? So that test was also not done properly, and they couldn't ensure the safety of these vehicles because they were tested, or it was only static vehicles which were tested. And I must indicate, honorable members, because during the investigation, it was very clear that the issue of allowing, or as Department of Trade and Industry, making these institutions to operate independently, SABS and NRCS, created a lot of these gaps, because the work which is done by the MIBs should be the work which is in fact is done, and SABS is ensuring that quality. So MIBs are independent and they operate as they please, or it's private companies, which as well NRCS is failing to monitor. But again, the other eye-opening issue was that SABS, for instance, if you are told that an SABS has conducted a test, they would not conduct an overall test on a product. But when they gave us examples that when you have a bottle of bottled water, sometimes the test is only conducted on the lid, not the whole bottle. So even in this instance, the test was only conducted on few items, but not the complete vehicle at its speed to determine the quality of the product. So the remedial actions, I think we've taken them through you, where we then requested the Minister of Transport to take agent and appropriate steps to make sure that the department has an extensive updated record of all these vehicles, and they have been retrofitted, and also make sure that those who have not been retrofitted are then removed from and scrapped, and then the owners be given an allowance so that they can acquire roadworthy and authorized vehicles, and also verify operator validity by inspecting operating licenses administration system to determine the number of vehicles attached to these operating licenses when they were scrapping, or when they are scrapping these vehicles, and also to facilitate stakeholder engagement for all the taxi operators, the financial institutions, and the taxi owners to make sure that the determination of the details of vehicles that were eligible for scrapping based on their latest statistics, so that when they reimburse or they give them the allowances, they would know how many taxis are involved. Ensure that the investigation is conducted on inactive system manipulation and come up with the system or improve their system, but then also those with fraudulent registration of vehicles, especially the officials of transport, they are brought to book or then they open criminal cases. I must indicate that SIU was investigating that fraudulent registration on the system by the Department of Transport. So I will also urge honorable members to check with the SIU whether they finally finalized their investigations and the outcome of their investigations, and whether there were any officials or who were identified, who were then where cases were then referred to SABS to open criminal cases of fraudulent registration of those vehicles on INATIS. So the Department of Transport DG was requested to ensure that measures are taken and agreed to with Minister are implemented, and through surveillance and monitoring ensure that there is no Toyota panel van that has been converted into a minibus taxi to carry passengers on the South African road. So they make sure that they impound all of them. And Department of Trade and Industry, as I indicated, that by separating these two institutions, it created a gap. They need to harness and foster good, effective and efficient working relations between NRCS and SABS, with one being the national regulator responsible for the maintenance of compulsory specifications and implementation of a regulatory and compliance system, and the other being a national standardization institution mandated to maintain national standards and ensure quality of commodities, products and services. This will ensure that the two entities complement each other, because during our investigation, it was very clear that there's a lot of, there was no good working relations between the two, and animosity, if I may say. So the CEO of Toyota was requested to consult with the minister with a view to participating in this stakeholder engagement aimed at addressing the problems and to deal with the root causes. And the president of Santaco and other taxi operators to ensure maximum cooperation with the department. So we had to make sure that all cooperate and they work together. So the remedial actions have been implemented on some of them. The complaint, the South African Taxi Council and Department of Transport welcomed the report. We all know about that. And we've received various progress reports on the implementation of the remedial action. And they've done the data mining process, which has identified 1,916 vehicles that could qualify to be scrapped. And they indicated that 1,226 vehicles still have operating licenses. So such licenses is a prerequisite to qualify for scrapping. So they have also conducted that stakeholder forum. We were informed about that. And they have also started, in fact, the operators were contacted, and once the scrapping has been approved with the permission of the operator, the initial scrapping allowance was 124,000, which was paid. And that has increased to 229,700. So a total of 478 vehicles have been received by the service provider, and 382 were paid at the time of the update. So the meeting of the stakeholders took place in May 2019, and the meeting with owner representatives took place on the 24th of May. So a letter was sent to SIU requesting that this matter be considered as part of the proclamation 37 of 2017 for June 2019. So this is the proclamation which honorable members can also follow through with the SIU, especially on dealing with the criminal conduct by the officials at the testing centers. Thank you, honorable members, for the time. I hope I'm still on time for you to maybe ask for clarity and questions if there are any.
Thank you. Thank you very much, PP. That was very useful. I forgot to tell you something when we started. I have to tell you this one. On Friday, we went as a portfolio committee to KwaMhlanga on oversight. Had the Office of the Public Protector been a political party, all parties there would have lost the vote. When the PP's office was introduced, the hall nearly was reverberating from excitement. So I thought I'd let you know that if you are considering standing for elections in Mpumalanga, thank you so much, Bibi. Colleagues, there is the report. Can I have an indication of hands? I think it was very, very useful. And can I have, colleagues, your hands so that we can engage on the report? I see Honorable McDonald, you will be number one. Any other hands? You know, colleagues, if you don't raise hands, I'll still call you. So just raise the hand so that I can just organize them. Honorable Hunsinger, you will be number two. Honorable Ketama Bala, are you not speaking this time? I will put you at number three anyway. Honorable McDonald, you may start.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, colleagues. It's very hard. Well, welcome to the Public Protector. A very well presented report and very insightful. I'm very interested in the fact that that Toyota was complicit, and not just Toyota, but some of the banks and the finance institutions knew about this as early as 2005. And I think as a committee or subcommittee, we need to make a decision that these companies also take responsibility that it, for these illegal conversions, because it was the poor black people that lost their lives in these illegally converted vehicles that are now they are sitting on the sideline, still being paid for the vehicles, and they have never been punished for what they have done, because they know, they, according to what I've understand from the report and what was presented to us by the Public Protector, is that they knew and that they encouraged the conversions. Then, Chairperson, through you, I've my biggest concern here is that I agree with the Public Protector. The remedial action where the vehicles were retrofitted, I'm not in agreement that this retrofit has made these vehicles any safer. And I am also of the opinion that those vehicles must also be removed from the vehicle register and scrapped. And I'm also very concerned to hear that the innator system is not actually across all provinces linked. So we could be facing a serious challenge where vehicles that have been deregistered in Gauteng would be re-registered in the Western Cape. And this would make these taxis continuously looping through the system, continuously killing the poorest of the poor. And Chair, I'm a bit lost here, Chair. I think these credit regulator must also come to the party. If the credit regulators fail to protect the citizens of this country from companies, banks, and other lending institutions where this type of injustices have happened, the credit regulator has got insurance. The credit regulator can literally pay each and every one of these people that have bought an illegally converted taxi on credit, can be refunded. And some of these taxis were repossessed because failure of payment. And those people will now still have that bad record, credit record on their name. And the national credit regulator needs to remove these people's bad records off their names, because I feel they should have been actually reimbursed with the full amount of money, Chairperson. And as I conclude, Chairperson, I think we as a subcommittee must seriously consider to call these regulator and the Toyota and any one of the companies that have been involved and knowingly being involved to come and account to us how they allowed the poorest of the poor to travel in these unsafe vehicles. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable McDee. Honorable Hunsinger, the time is yours, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon to Advocate Kwebane and also Advocate Kela, or Leka, rather. Thank you for, again, giving us a summary and a briefing of the report. I've studied the report thoroughly, and I've also been in touch with various other stakeholders and people that have been involved in various forms and ways related to this topic and subject. So, Public Protector, my questions are therefore not directed to you in person, but to rather reflect on your additional knowledge over and above what you wrote in the report, since, as you might know, we've extended the scope of the committee's work wider than just to view the report. My first question, therefore, would be, having known about this from at least 2012, when the complaint was laid with your office, I know you took office after that. So again, in terms of the institution, and it's now 2020, and yes, there are allegations that the department knew of this as early as 2009, whereas some people said as soon as or early as 2005 already. My question to you is, having generated 139 pages only, why did it took so long to compile this report? Certainly it could have been done quicker, sooner. Everything was there. The case is so obvious. And all the people involved are so accessible and available. The other element which raises huge concern and a near anxiety is the submission by a stakeholder that more than 40,000 conversions of some kind are currently on our roads. This versus the constantly mentioned 2,353 vehicles, which in a way seems to be the cutoff number, which creates the impression that those are the only illegally converted panel vans. Whereas in a presentation, we heard that we are currently, in terms of live vehicles on the roads, have over 40,000. So the number is much bigger. Then I would have hoped that the remedial action would then address the systemic nature of this and not just confine the remedial action to a limited number and therefore resorting to avenues of retrofitment and taxi recapitalization in order to compensate totally unsuspected bias. In fact, I'm very disappointed that so little is made of the unsuspecting bias. And that the taxi recapitalization program has been suggested as the way to compensate someone that lost a business and not just the vehicle. So I would also like to know, going over to your report, on page 56, bullet point 5.1.98.7, it makes mention of ambulances, where you state in that paragraph that on the 24th of February 2017, you met with representatives of Toyota South Africa, and during that conversation, it was mentioned to you that ambulances are also being converted from panel vans. My question is, did you have any knowledge of this ambulance conversion from panel vans prior to this, or was this the first time that you got to know about this practice? Then I would like to move to page 70, where under paragraph 5.1.139, let me also just get there, where the paragraph mentions NRCS and the conformity of those regulations. So in relation to the conformity to regulations and manufacturer specifications, why was the manufacturer's non-transferable authorization or consent not obtained by NRCS prior to homologation, as what is prescribed in what you would what you also refer to in the SANS 10267. Then on page 71, paragraph 5.1.140, relating to that, and this is around testing stations, how did these fake quantum taxis pass the close scrutiny of NRCS trained vehicle testing station inspectors? Not just then, but up until as late as very recently, they are still avoiding and passing by these NRCS inspectors. Then I would like to know from you, in terms of your professional opinion, who would you say is liable for this regulatory failure? Because certainly we do, as a committee, we do have an appetite to engage with all stakeholders, also the insurance companies who insured these taxis and still are, not just the manufacturers and not just the financiers. But in your opinion, in terms of the government's regulatory authority structures, who at the end of the day is liable for these vehicles to have been allowed on our roads? Then my fourth question, relating to NRCS, how could this have been prevented in terms of addressing the systemic nature of this failure? And then my fifth question is around government's responsibility, and I would have hoped that you also add something of this, since this is an international issue, since manufacturing standards is also regulated and with an involvement of Toyota Japan, because certainly Toyota Japan relies on conventions which we signed and agreed to adhere to principles of patent and manufacturing standards. How would this impede on our relationship in terms of the responsibility that we carry through the Paris Convention, the Bern, and the TRIPS trade agreements that we are signatories of? My next question is from page 71, paragraph 5.1.145.
Honorable Onsinga, as you continue, just consider the sitting at 2 o'clock, but please continue.
Chairperson, you were the ones making jokes. Advocate, we have a special relationship in the committee. We're not serious. So thank you, Chairperson. I will ask. Let me jump to the next one, Chairperson. My following question is around the mention on page 72 under paragraph 5.1.145, where you talk of a memorandum that was signed on the 11th of February 2010 by the minister. And this then caused or generated the retrofitment process. Can you give us insight as to what this memorandum exactly was? Was it a form? Was it specification? What was it based on? What was the content? Because a MINMEC meeting with a particular PowerPoint presentation then links onto this. So could you give us insight onto that? In that? I would want to conclude with a question also relating to page 72. There were some NRCS charges that was part of the bill which taxi owners had to pay as part of this retrofitment charge. Now, my question is, do you regard it as fair for a taxi owner to have paid NRCS, whereas it was the failure of NRCS that caused the shortfall in terms of safety standards. And in order to then attain safety standards, it was expected of taxi owners to pay. You regard that as fair. Chairperson, my last question, and just an opinion of advocate Nkwebane, to just give us an impression of, do you think that in having lost a business as a taxi owner, it is fair for someone then to settle for 127,000, which is currently what the taxi recapitalization would credit someone in writing off a brand new taxi yet converted panel van? Do you think that is fair to such a family? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hunsinga. I had offered Honorable Stole, without him raising a hand, a space. Now I'm considering withdrawing it if he doesn't take it now.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and greeting to Honorable Mkwebana and the team. First of all, we want to thank for the information that he provided to us, because now we have an information and then we understand actually the frustration that the people are counting outside there. But my question to our public protector is that because in 2005 the department the Toyota were aware that there's this illegally panel van actually challenges, and then on 2009 the department was aware that there is that again, the panel van that is in our industry. Now what I'm trying to check, and then the NLCS again failed to take step for those panel van. Now I'm just trying to highlight those three, because both of them they fail to protect our people who are using the taxis, and then again they do fail to protect our transport owners, because some of them bought those panel van without having an idea what is happening in the Toyota industry. Now, what I'm trying to check from the public protector, who's supposed to take a responsibility on this illegal selling of panel van? Because the department says they are aware about it in 2009, and the public protector gets the complaint in 2012. And then the Public Protector Act after that, but there was no action before the Public Protector Act. So I'm trying to check who's supposed to carry a responsibility, who's supposed to kill to be charged on this illegally selling of panel van. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, colleagues. PP, I'm sure you have picked up the questions. I would just want to add on one or two comments and one question from me so that we can give you and your team an opportunity to respond. Now, the first one is purely clarity, slightly linked to what Honorable Hunsinga said about conversions of ambulances. Now, all the time we're talking about Toyota, my understanding is that you limited your investigation based on the complaint by the respective complainant. Therefore, there could not have been any investigation you conducted with Nissan or whoever else could have converted vehicles. I want to check if my assumption is correct on that one. The second one is, I'm not sure to what extent you are monitoring the implementation of your remedial action or requirements. Are you getting enough report back? Should there be any action taken by those you are directed to do so? Are there any actions being considered as we continue with ours that we are going on? Those will be my two comments, maybe slight question, the first one, and I will leave it to you, PP, to respond to where you can to these questions. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members, for your comments. I think other comments, I will commit that we can send the written submission to assist you in the investigation and consultation with the other stakeholders. And I would also indicate or request either the chief operating officer or the investigator concerned, especially there's a matter relating to the issue of the time we took during the process in finalizing the matter. So Honorable McDonald, thank you for the your contribution. And indeed, that's how we felt as the public protector team. And I would also say that engaging the complainant, Mr. Henny Dipier, will also help a lot for the committee, because he was working in the banking industry, and he also has all the other evidence which will help, especially when you are going to hold the financial institutions and the MIBs to account, because that evidence is there with him and it will help you a lot. So, and indeed, these institutions should be taking accountability as far as the losses which were faced by these families and the commuters and the business people, because also there's a lot of very touching stories of various families or the business or those who had who were taxi owners, and some of them had to return the taxis whilst waiting for, in fact, there was an issue of some of them were impounded and there was never a time where they would be assisted to either do the retrofit or even replace that, and some of them lost sources of income. But then indeed, these retrofitted taxis still, in the report, I'm not sure whether we put some of the pictures of how these accidents, when that taxi is involved in an accident, it becomes like it's just shattered, and you know, it's very rare to even find somebody surviving, or if a person survives, that person will be very much injured or will even be paralyzed. So that's the damage which was caused by these taxes. And indeed, the issue that the credit regulator, surely that will help as the portfolio committee to take them on, because that is also encouraging to protect the public, because these people were put in the situation by the very same banks and by the very same dealers where they procured these vehicles. So clearing their names will assist a lot. But also I think the committee can also check with them, because RAF falls within the portfolio committee's mandate. Also, if they can also provide their report, the accidents which occurred during this particular period and the monies which were paid by the state to those who have claimed any costs, because that will then be compared to what the state has lost and to what those who can be held to account needs to pay. Honorable Hansinga, I think the issue...
Advocate, if I may, sorry, just half a minute. If you could pick up those things you think you really need to respond to, but I think your suggestion to put it in writing assists us, because we then have got something to refer to on your responses. But if you can use the last few minutes to just make general comments where you would like to on other things that, but others, if you could help us in writing, we'll appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Indeed, my team is listening and we will indeed deal with them, especially Honorable Hansinga, your questions and the referral to the various pages of the report. It will help us to go through the report and also provide the responses in details, and also give you even evidence which we relied on, because that will also help you as the portfolio committee in that particular aspect. So the issue of who is liable, indeed, it's a huge question, which as the portfolio committee, you have within your mandate, because indeed Toyota South Africa, remember, they also benefited. I mean, when their sales were skyrocketing, and again, check that against the benefits which accrued to them, and the issue of their SARS-related payments, because, I mean, those vehicles are imported as panel vans, but then they will then be sold after being converted, and that will also be an issue which needs to be looked into. But then in my closing is that the remedial actions are implemented, but then we will also indicate where we find gaps, because as the portfolio committee, you hold the executive to account, and we will indicate which other aspects which are not moving with speed. And I think we will also deal with the issue of the 40,000, which some of them are still on the roads. And I think the issue of SIU, which is one which I will request the honorable members to maybe check with them on the progress, though we've also followed up with them on the matter. I will take this opportunity with my team to say thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. And we're looking forward to working closely with the portfolio committee, because including that Muloto corridor, we will appreciate your intervention, because it affects the public, and it's all about Exwell. That road has killed so many people. And I think your intervention will also be part of your legacy on changing the status quo, because that matter has been pending for a very long time. Thank you so much, honorable members. We thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you very much, PP and your team. And once more, I want on behalf of the committee to appreciate the time you have taken, the effort you have made. We can hear from your presentation the passion you have for this matter and your work. Again, as I said, to bring such a high-powered delegation with you is an indication that I don't want us to take lightly, because yes, there are institutions that will think that portfolio committees ourselves should not be taken seriously. But I think your example is showing that this is the right thing to do. We truly appreciate it, and we truly hope this is not the last interaction on this matter and on the other one of Muloto. As you've said, as the time comes, we will certainly come to your office. But on this one, I think there's so much more. I hope your door will still be open so that we can further engage to make sure that we truly, truly deal with this thing once and for all. So with those words, I want to say a big thank you to you and the team. We truly appreciate it. We will just wrap up, and you are more than welcome should you want to exit the meeting to do so. Thank you once more.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. Thank all you. Right.
Colleagues, there it is, and the bells are ringing. I'm going to propose that we defer the minutes to tomorrow if we'll find the time. We are seeing NRCS tomorrow. I hope I'm representing you well, colleagues. Are we in agreement?
Second that recommendation, Chairperson.
I'm proposing that we defer the minutes that we have of our previous meeting with the RTMC. They are very brief, but I just don't want us to squeeze the time too much. I know that Honorable Hun Singer, with his tie on, is looking forward to his debate. my suggestion is that we defer the meetings and adjourn the meeting. Are we in agreement?
Thank you, Chairperson. We are in agreement.
We are in agreement, Chair. We are in agreement.
Thank you so much to the team and everybody. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much, Ms. Carlson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, PP. Thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Ms. Carlson.